brought to you by Penguin.
The Phantom of the Opera by Gaston Leroux. Translated by Mireille Ribière. With an introduction by Jan Matlock. Read by Artie Fruchon.
To my good old brother Joe, who has nothing of a ghost, but definitely something of an angel of music, like Eric. Ever affectionately, Gaston Leroux. Prologue, in which the author of this singular account tells the reader how he came to ascertain that the Phantom of the Opera really existed. The Phantom of the Opera did exist. He was not, as was long believed, born out of the fertile imagination of the artists, the credulity of the directors, or the ludicrous fancy and overexcited brains of the young ladies of the corps de ballet, their mothers, the ushers, the cloakroom attendants, and the concierge. Yes, he did exist in flesh and blood, although he assumed in every respect the appearance of a ghost, that is, of a shadow. When I consulted the archives of the National Academy of Music, I was immediately struck by the curious coincidence between the mishaps attributed to the ghost and an exceedingly mysterious and extraordinary tragedy that occurred at the same time. I soon conceived the idea that the former might provide a rational explanation for the latter. The events in question took place no more than 30 years ago. Even today, it would not be difficult to meet, in the ballet room, elderly gentlemen whose words are not to be doubted and who can remember, as if it were only yesterday, the mysterious and dramatic circumstances that surrounded the abduction of Christine Daae, the disappearance of Viscount Raoul de Chagny, and the death of his elder brother, Count Philippe, whose body was found on the shore of the underground lake that lies beneath the Paris Opera House where it borders the Rue Scribe. However, until now, it would not have occurred to any of these witnesses that the somewhat mythical character of the Phantom of the Opera might have something to do with that dreadful affair. The truth dawned upon me slowly. In my investigations, I was constantly coming across events that appeared, at first, to not be of this world, and more than once I was very close to giving up, for I was exhausting myself vainly chasing an elusive image. At last, I found proof that my intuitions were not unfounded, and all my efforts were rewarded the day I finally ascertained that the Phantom of the Opera was more than a mere shadow. That day, I had spent long hours poring over the light-hearted memoirs of a theatre director, whose author, the all-too-sceptical Moncharmin, had understood nothing, during his term at the Opera, of the mysterious behaviour of the Phantom. In fact, he was deriding it overmuch, even as he was becoming the first victim of the curious financial operation that took place inside the magic envelope. I had just left the library and was in poor spirits when I met the charming administrator of our National Academy on a landing. He was chatting with a spry old man of smart appearance, to whom he cheerfully introduced me. The administrator knew all about my investigations, and how frustrated I had been in my search for the whereabouts of the examining magistrate for the famous de Chagny case, Monsieur Faure. No one knew what had become of him, whether alive or dead. But then, upon his return from Canada, where he had just spent 15 years, he had come at once to the secretarial office of the opera to apply for complimentary tickets. The little old man before me was Monsieur Faure himself. We spent much of the evening together, and he told me all he knew and had understood at the time about the de Chagny case. Given the lack of evidence, he was bound to conclude that the Viscount had lost his sanity and that his elder brother's death was accidental. He was nevertheless convinced that something terrible had happened between the two brothers in connection with Christine Daae. He was unable to say what had become of Christine and the Viscount. And, of course, when I mentioned the Phantom, he simply laughed. He too had been told.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?